You're listening to Paris Live AM, the English language program on Radio France International. Good morning and a very warm welcome to today's program. It's Thursday, the 23rd of July. I'm Olia Horton. Here are some of our top stories this morning. Greek lawmakers pass a second batch of reforms to help unlock a huge new bailout for Greece's stricken economy. A 20-year-old Turkish student is identified as the suicide bomber behind Monday's attack, which killed 32 youth activists in the town of Suric near the Syrian border. And in Burundi, as vote counting continues after the presidential election, leading opposition leader Agathon Rwasa calls on President Pierre Nkurunziza to form a unity government to avoid another civil war. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll have a sports update and a look at the African press with Michael Fitzpatrick. Do stay with us. Greece's parliament passed a crucial second set of reforms yesterday, allowing negotiations on an €86 billion European Union bailout to begin. The bill, which includes civil justice reforms, a bank deposit protection scheme and measures to shore up the liquidity of the banks, was backed by more than 200 MPs, a clear majority, as voting continued in the 300-seat parliament. Analysts had regarded the second vote as an important test of whether Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras could avoid another deep split within his party and head off the risk of early elections after only 6 months in power. RFI's Fabien Janik-Chabonel asked Stella Lady, senior lecturer in business management at Queen Mary University in London, more about the content of the bill.
The details just came out a couple of days ago, so in reality that's why a lot of the MPs are complaining, because there is not enough time to study it and have a detailed discussion. But the idea is to improve the procedures and arrangements for the civil justice system in order to accelerate the judicial processes and to reduce costs.
And what about that bank recovery directive? What is that about?
This is part of the banking union, of the effort that is being made at the EU level to create a banking union. It will be a guarantee for the banks of Greece that they participate fully in this emerging banking union, and for the savings of citizens will be guaranteed up to the €100,000. So I think it's a very positive directive, and it's the transposition of this directive in Greek law.
A 20-year-old Turkish student has been identified as the suicide bomber who killed 32 youth activists in the town of Suric near the Syrian border on Monday. Local media identified the attacker as Said Abdurrahman Algoz, an ethnic Kurd from the southeastern province of Adıyaman, who reportedly had links to the Islamic State armed group. 100 other people were injured in the blast, which targeted mainly university students who were holding a news conference at the Amara Cultural Centre. They had been planning to travel across the border to Syria to help rebuild the town of Kobani. Meanwhile, the Turkish government held a cabinet meeting over national security issues. Correspondent Isabel Hunter has more from Istanbul.
All eyes are on Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu today after he convened an emergency cabinet meeting yesterday to discuss an action plan to strengthen security along the country's 900-kilometre-long border with Syria. The country has been left reeling after a 20-year-old Turkish suicide bomber with suspected links to the Islamic State armed group killed 32 people on Monday in the border town of Suruç. Although no group has claimed responsibility for the attack, hundreds have clashed with police during demonstrations held to protest the government's perceived complicity in helping the terrorist organisation. And tempers flared at the highest levels as the co-chair of the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party, Selahattin Demirtas, accused the Prime Minister, his AK Party and President Erdogan of turning a blind eye to the Islamic State jihadi activity in Turkey. The PM emphatically denies that Turkey is complicit in any support of the group and has embarked on a campaign to arrest IS operatives in the country. Further rocking Turkey's sense of security yesterday was a double murder of two policemen in their own home in the country's southern border town of Çelimpinar. Responsibility for the attack has been claimed by the internationally recognised Kurdish terrorist group, the PKK, who accused the two officers of cooperating with IS.
Correspondent Isabel Hunter there in Istanbul. In Burundi, vote counting is still underway and is being monitored by teams from the African Union, with results expected on Friday. But the African Union and the EU have already announced they won't recognise the results. President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a controversial third term in office has been met with violent protests and condemnation, and over 100 people have died since April. The opposition claims a third term is unconstitutional as it goes against the Arusha peace agreement that ended fighting between Hutus and Tutsis. in a bid to prevent the country slipping back into civil war. Leading opposition leader Agathon Rwasa yesterday called on the president to form a unity government. The president, who looks set to win a new five-year term, welcomed this prospect but rejected calls of cutting short his mandate. Patrick Hajiyandi is a senior project director at the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation. Speaking from Johannesburg to RFI's Christina Okello, he speaks about whether a unity government could work.
If the current government or CNDD will be somehow more open to form a unity government, this may lead to easing political tensions. The only problem is that probably not all members of the opposition will be ready to accept such solution, and probably not all of the members of the ruling party will be also ready for this solution.
And one of the other challenges to this possible unity government is talks of a mounting armed rebellion. Who's behind this rebellion?
There are members of the opposition, and there are members of Burundi Army who deserted. There are also supporters of the civil society.
That was Christina Okello speaking to Patrick Hajiyandi, the Senior Project Director at the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation, on the line from Johannesburg. Human Rights Watch has accused troops from South Sudan of committing war crimes in rebel-held parts of Unity State. According to a report published by the NGO yesterday, government troops allegedly crushed civilians with tanks, carried out public gang rapes and burnt people alive. South Sudan's presidential spokesman said the government categorically rejected these allegations. The group documented atrocities by government forces in the ongoing 19-month-old war, which has displaced more than 2 million people. The Sudan People's Liberation Army, the SPLA, launched a major offensive against rebel forces in April with fierce fighting in Unity, which was once a key oil-producing area. Rebel forces have also been accused of carrying out atrocities, including rape, killings, and, like the government, recruiting child soldiers. Sky Wheeler, a researcher in Juba for Human Rights Watch, says women were particularly targeted.
We spoke to around 126 people, and from those interviews, we documented 56 rape incidents. So that means that either we spoke to a victim or someone who witnessed a rape. Now, in many of these cases, women were raped in groups. If we spoke to one witness or one victim, they often would have seen others in the same incident. Women really suffered the brunt of these attacks, not only rape, but also very widespread beatings. Many of the women we spoke to had been beaten at least once by the attackers, sometimes with ropes or sticks. Others, women were abducted, especially young women. We believe that what we documented is really only the tip of the iceberg.
The United Nations Special Envoy to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Martin Kobler, has called for closer cooperation among Great Lakes countries to break up the lucrative traffic of mineral smuggling, which costs the DRC up to 800 million euros per year. He said the problem has to be done to tackle this problem.
There are 2,000 mines in eastern DRC. The government, and together with us, we have a program to validate the mines, but we only validated 170 of the 2,000. There are 300,000 miners in the area. You know, there are 10 million people who depend in one way or the other on the mining sector. So this is a problem which really has to be addressed much more vigorously than did it so far. This is the main cause, the root cause. If you tackle the root causes, the armed groups' problem will evaporate.
At least 15 people were killed and dozens injured in two suicide bombings in Cameroon's Marua city in the north of the country. The first explosion occurred in the afternoon at a market, while the second occurred in a highly populated neighbourhood. The attacks were carried out by two female suicide bombers under the age of 15, according to officials. Meanwhile, a further 42 people lost their lives in a series of blasts at two bus stations in Gombe in northeastern Nigeria. The latest atrocities come as Boko Haram released a new video on Twitter maintaining that they had not yet been defeated. A new five-nation force from Nigeria, Niger, Chad, Cameroon and Benin is due to deploy by July 30th to combat the six-year insurgency that has left at least 15,000 people dead. You're listening to Paris Live AM. This is Radio France International.